Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's high noon on a long weekend. Thank you so much for tuning into Nation Radio. We have Oilers stories of yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and major hockey news around the world. And lots could happen in the next 2 hours, and lots will as well. We've got all kinds of stories to follow. Looking forward to free agency, Justin Schultz, Ryan Smith, and more. Your questions always welcome. Email questions to nationradio at theteam1260.com or Twitter at @itsnationradio or lowtide _. Also grab questions from the comments at Oilers Nation and Low Tide as well. Our guest today, Tom Lynn from Veritas Hockey. Lynn's background in the hockey business makes him an ideal guest to have on the eve of free agent frenzy. We'll talk about Justin Schultz there a little bit too. Bruce McCurdy from Cult of Hockey will be by. He's been at the Oilers development camp all week, and he'll share his insight on that as well as give his thoughts on the Oilers summer so far. Kent Wilson from the Nations will talk specifically about the Flames, but much else as well. I'm looking forward to finding out what he thinks of Jay Feaster's week. A kind of an uneven week. I think Jay Feaster looked at all the free agents and said, I was going to sign my own. That'll be better. And Cam Charron from Leafs Nation, managing editor. He was at the draft last week. We had so many guests, we didn't have a chance to get him on. So I want to talk about Toronto at the draft. And Morgan Riley was just on with the Pipeline guys. We'll talk about that too. And a few things from the Big Smoke, including, I mean, you know, we heard they were in the Justin Schultz sweepstakes as well, although it doesn't sound like it today. You never know with this stuff. You know, he could backtrack, change his mind. And Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun. Jones had the Kruger story, I think, before anybody did. And we'll talk about that, Schultz and the Oilers in free agency, and Ryan Smith as well. So let's get to it. Last week, it was Nail. This week, it's something approaching Bieber fever. It isn't Justin, but it's Schultz. And he'll tell the world in just a few minutes, as we understand it, where he's heading. And I was going to say when the white smoke emerges from the chimney at the top of the Sistine Chapel. But Jim Matheson tweeted out the joke. He stole my stuff, man. So Justin Schultz at sometime this afternoon is going to go outside. If he sees his shadow, he comes to Edmonton. If not, we don't know. So there you go. Anyway, it'll come up in the next few hours. We understand that it'll be before free agency, which happens our time, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. So if we don't have it, we'll have it later. We promise you that. The Oilers are in it. We know that from Andy Strickland and various other sources on the internet and across the hockey world. And we understand Ottawa is in it, and then maybe a third team that is unnamed. So how's that for blanket coverage, right? We wait. Connor, if he does choose Edmonton, we should have like the Hallelujah Chorus or something like that ready to roll. And then if he doesn't, I'm going to need a copy of that George Carlin, seven words you cannot use on radio, because I'm going to have to know which ones to stay away from if that happens. Last week at this time, we were talking about a Terry Jones article that put a few things together in regard to the Oilers head coaching situation. He added it all up, and the answer was Ralph Kruger. Good reporting by Jones. We know that came about this week. The world's most famous European hockey coach from Manitoba is now the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers. The kids drafted last weekend took part in the Oilers development camp in Sherwood Park, going on, as a matter of fact, right now, as I understand it, or just wrapping up. Lots of positives on Nail and Oscar Klefbom. Everybody's talking about how smooth he is, and that'll be interesting, because if he does come to camp in the fall, as has been rumored, and he plays well, you never know. The word was he was going to stay in Färjestad, but that could change. It's a fluid situation on the Oilers' blue line. Zharkov, others, will talk about that with two people, Terry Jones and Bruce McCurdy here this afternoon. Free agent Sunday hits tomorrow at 10 o'clock. The Oilers are unlikely to be as active as they were a year ago. If you remember, most of us, I certainly felt they wouldn't be that active. And then they brought in Eric Bélanger, Ben Eager, Darcy Hordichuk, Cam Barker, and Corey Potter as free agents, and then they traded for Andy Sutton as well. So it was a very, very busy day last July 1st, and I suspect we'll have less free agent signings, but maybe a few deals, and there's a possibility of Ryan Smith getting signed. I understand Mark Spector tweeted out this morning that the Oilers and Smith are expected to conclude negotiations today. That doesn't mean they're going to sign him, but there's been an effort, there's a push on, and signing Ryan Smith would solve you know, a few problems for this Edmonton Oilers team. Oilers signed David Musil to his entry-level deal. He'll be going back to the Vancouver Giants of the WHL, very likely, unless he makes the Edmonton Oilers in the fall. And with the kind of defense we're expecting them to bring in, you know, I believe that he'll be a WHL player and a Giant in the fall. Some of the names that I'd like to see from free agency: Ryan Smith, Daniel Winnick, good two-way player. Shane Doan is on, apparently going to be on the market. And among defensemen, Matt Carl, Jason Garrison, and we wait. But it's going to be a very, very interesting 2 hours. We'll keep you updated on Justin Schultz and all that's going down there and any other breaking news, trades, signings, because we're 24 hours away from free agency. There might be some late signings and maybe some trades of rights and contracts. It's 12:05. We're joined now by Tom Lynn, a player agent and former assistant general manager and general manager. Can talk about all sides of free agency in the draft. Tom, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, but it's a busy day this year, and there's a lot of different things going on than I think a regular year, so just trying to figure it all out.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time, and let's get right to it, starting with the question that has been sent to me most about free agency, and I'm going to have you answer it. How can teams possibly sign players so quickly after the start of free agency? We know that you can't mention a player, but is it sort of assumed that there's an opportunity there for there's maybe a good fit for one team and one player, and maybe you've done a little bit of groundwork without mentioning the name? Or how does that work?
Well, first of all, you know, and this might be addressed in collective bargaining, I don't know, it's a big issue, but in football and some other sports, they have a shopping period before UFAs can sign. That would be so beneficial in hockey, because how many times the player play for a team his whole career, and he's 27, 28, or 29, he hits the free agent market July 1, he's expected to sign, you know, to get his money and get to a place, he's going to sign a 5 to 10 year deal, and based on a phone call, because you're not allowed to contact teams beforehand. So you haven't talked to them, you haven't talked to the coach, you haven't visited the city, and you jump right in. So it's unique to hockey. The players have to make some very important decisions, and teams do too, sometimes based on a 15-minute phone call. So given that, yes, and for the players on the agency side, we go through the teams with them in depth, you know, depth charts, prospects, who's going to sign, what the city's like, you know, all the different parts of what can happen in quality of life before that day, because you might get a team that calls and says, you got 15 minutes to decide, and that's all you have.
It does sound arcane, and is it just a matter of the hockey always saying, well, we've always done it that way, and never really looking at the process properly?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, free agency really bloomed in the 90s, late 90s, when we got those big deals just after 2000, the Bill Guerin-type deals, where it was so much about the money because salaries were going up so rapidly, I don't think people were maybe as focused on quality of life. You know, how many times did we see free agency set records each year, 99, 2000, 01, 02, 03? Then you got to that last collective bargaining session, and with the year lost, everyone was just focused on the numbers. So this came up. So really, it's been more of an afterthought for that reason. Now that players are signing deals based on where they want to play and quality of life, quality of team, chance to win and all that, it would probably make more sense going into the future.
Now, for an agent or for an agency, you have a group of players who may have interest right off the hop. Is it a matter of juggling five or six players, or is there one agent for each player, or how does that work internally?
Well, generally, you try to send some emails with those questions explained to teams on the morning of July 1, just as it starts. So, you know, if you want player X, call this number, player Y, call this number. It was tougher on the team side because you may be looking at forwards, goalie, and defense. You have your list in the pro scouting room, and you're splitting up to call a vast number of people, and you're trying to send emails at the same time to stay in some of them. On the player side, you have anywhere from, you know, in a big year, 3 to 7 players who are really getting July 1 interest. In that case, you can kind of take the calls. I mean, worst case scenario, if you have a player get a few offers, you know, you just try to put them off. The worst part, frankly, is a few teams have a predilection towards making quick offers, meaning they wait, and then they say, all right, here's the offer, but we've got to know right away, or we're going to offer to somewhere else. That's where the pinch comes.
Yeah, and that does happen, right, because that does appear to be some of the teams maybe don't go, they might not tick off the number one or two or player available, but they might go three or four and say, you know, we want to make this deal now, we want to close it out because this is the move we want to make, and you've got to go to your guy and say, do you want to do this or do you want to wait? So it kind of makes it more difficult because you have to make that decision in an instant.
Yeah, and it's almost always the team that does that. I mean, I look back even when the Y was pursuing and Matt Cullen and Mark Parrish, you know, prices were climbing, getting late in the day. Other forwards are signing. We're facing the prospect of not landing a top forward. So you have to make that call. You have to say, all right, yes or no, turn it around. And often the agents, you know, we try to buy some time. Well, he went to the supermarket, or I'll have to reach him. But oftentimes, and Nashville does this a lot, because they figure, you know, we'll find out if the guy wants to play here. You've got 15 minutes. And if we don't hear, you know, we're offering it to Joe Smith.
How impressive or how much weight would an agent and a player, I guess it would depend on the player, but if you were sitting with a mid-level free agent and a team calls and offers maybe a year or two longer or possibly, you know, 500 grand more per year, or maybe, as we've seen happen this week, some kind of a no-movement clause, does that spruce things up? Does that make it more attractive for the player, the more security?
Well, you know, depending on the situation, yes. You don't have too many Kirby Puckets out there who will sign one-year deals every year just to maximize their value. But, man, it really depends on the player. Some guys are so focused on the hockey and don't want to necessarily commit as a young free agent for the rest of the career somewhere. But essentially, if you're 28, you sign anything more than a five-year deal, you're thinking, you know, this is my career. So that's part of it. The no move and no trade clauses are helpful because obviously they can be waived, but that way a player doesn't sign, say, for a discount with a top team, and then within a year be traded to a bottom team, and now he's at a discount for a bottom team. So if a team hopes to land a player, you know, at a good number, what they consider, the player considers a discounted number, then yes, they have to give him that, because otherwise they could, you know, trade him to a bottom team next week.
In conversation with Tom Lynn, a player agent and former assistant GM and general manager in the NHL, this usually happens with goaltenders, or has in the recent past. How great is the fear of being the player who doesn't have a team to play for as a starting goaltender? And that does happen sometimes when you're the last guy and you the dance is over and you're standing up and everybody else is sitting down with a job. Is that a pressure too, for specifically for goaltenders, but also for position players?
You know, it's not as much for position players. For goaltenders, you know, historically it wasn't, because they were in such demand going back. But now, you know, in recent 3 years, young goalies are kind of the vogue right now. And many of them are playing well, so the more veteran guys, like the Vokoun situation, needed to realize that. You know, the funny thing is, there's not necessarily a lot of defense positions open, but there are a lot of defensemen. Teams seem more willing to sign extra defensemen and say, you know, especially with the middling guys you talked about, if you have a 4 or 5 defenseman, there are a number of teams who will still sign him for good money, because you don't know how things are going to shake out, injuries, what have you. And in forward, for most part, for forwards, unless you're a specialized guy, you know, like Owen Nolan during the end of his career, guys trying to hang on, they do get signed. So I don't think they worry about it as much. This summer will be interesting because of the CBA ending and potential, you know, teams doing anything differently past July. You might get a sense of guys wanting to sign before it gets too far into free agency until later July.
Do you, and I know it's not your player, so in regard to Justin Schultz, is this something that where there's a loophole and the player gets free agency long before, even limited free agency, long before the CBA expects him to? Do you feel like this is the way of the future, where teams will sort of interview or almost apply to the player for the opportunity? Or is that something that should and will be reserved for people like Brad Richards?
Well, you know, it really isn't a loophole. It was a planned part of the CBA, because if you think about the difference between junior and college players, if you were a junior player and had not signed, you can go back in the draft, or if you're old enough, you become free as well. This loophole, as it were, was designed so college players, basically teams get their rights for 4 years and sometimes 5 if they go to prep school after being drafted. So saying to the college players, all right, just because you were drafted 32nd overall and the guy next year is drafted 33rd overall from Owen Sound, doesn't mean you're tied to that team for 5 years. You know, after a certain period of time, you can give them notice. You leave school, you get notice, and then you can become a free agent. But it's really, you know, younger than a junior free agent would be. It's just being celebrated so much because of the status of the player.
Let's quickly, before we let you go, Tom, just talk a little bit about the draft and the craziness there. You know, we were told before this year's draft that the depth was a little different and there would be some selections that surprised us, and it really did happen. I think number 10 overall was a little bit of a surprise. As an agent, how was that experience? Did you have a situation where you felt some players would go in a certain area and didn't, and vice versa?
Well, I would say yes. Not as much at the top. I mean, Kevin Bay's pick there was, you know, slightly surprised, but his stock rose a lot in the prior 2 weeks. So people are slotting him kind of privately in the 15 to 20 range. Obviously, Calgary's pick was a surprise to a number of people. See how that would work out. But I wouldn't say the top was too surprising. What surprised me was the number of Europeans drafted late. Mm-hmm. You'd seen that go down in recent years. And people looking more toward the North Americans and a lot of high schoolers, college, junior players drafted. But, you know, I saw a number of players, especially from Minnesota, and even, for example, Cody Corbett with the Edmonton Oil Kings, ranked 70th overall by Central, going into the final. You know, those guys not being drafted and a host of Europeans being drafted from secondary teams. I don't have a finger on that yet, you know, why it happened, but it's going to be an anomaly looking back in a couple of years to see how that works out.
What do you mentioned Corbett, and let's use him as an example, because, you know, here's a player who was draft eligible, didn't get drafted, and that is unusual. I mean, I think most people felt he would be selected. Is that something that as an agent you have to handle and let him know that there's a lot of what we might call overagers or 19-year-olds and then 20-year-olds getting drafted far more than in the past as well?
Right. I mean, the tough thing is, and I had a couple players in that position, Minnesota high schoolers, two of them ranked by Central who should have gone. And you have to tell them it's a tough thing. You're disappointed you didn't get drafted, but number one, it's the best thing for you. In other words, you know, the chances of you playing another year being drafted higher and improving your stock are great. And on the off chance you became a free agent after a few drafts, you know, that's the best situation. You don't need to pick a team to go to that has the least depth and you can make it to the NHL the quickest. You know, I always tell them, you could be a great, great, great defenseman, but if you signed with the Wild and they have six great defensive prospects like they do now, you're in tough.
Yeah.
Like Shea Genaway. So the situation is they're better off having not be drafted, but emotionally it's a tough thing to break through.
Tom, we know you're busy, and I thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend. Enjoy, and we reserve the right to call you back here over the summer.
All right, thanks. Take care.
Thanks very much to Tom Lynn, player agent, former assistant general manager, and general manager from Veritas. You can check it out, Veritas. They're on Twitter, and they have a web page as well, and they can pass along information if you are a young player and interested in an agency. Definitely, Tom Lynn is a capable guy and an interesting fellow, and we so much thank him for his time, because I imagine every agent involved with the National Hockey League right now is on, in the words of Kramer, no sleep. And probably won't be until about, I don't know, Sunday night at midnight, maybe catch a couple of hours. It's going to be a crazy time. There's no doubt about it. Now, as we mentioned at the top of the show, there's lots going on. The Justin Schultz situation has not, Connor, he hasn't let us know who he's signing with yet. So we'll wait for that. And then we also have some interesting information on Ryan Smith, and we'll get to Bruce McCurdy as well from the Cult of Hockey. He's been down at the development camp, and we'll find out exactly what's going on there and who he was impressed by. We're going to take a break and be right back right after this.